This is the Authentic Persuasion Show. What's going on, everybody? Jason here. Welcome to episode 629 of the Authentic Persuasion Show. So today is going to be my sales gem recap of the conversation I had with Beth Renninger from the University of South Carolina. It was a great series of conversations. Absolutely loved it. Part two was my absolute favorite for so many reasons, which I'm going to dive into today in this recap. Please make sure you check out those three episodes, whether it's on the podcast, whether it's on the YouTube. You can go to the Jason Cutter channel there. Like, all the links are going to be in the show notes here, but make sure to check out the content, support this content, not just for me and not just for Beth, but really for the sales community as a whole. Really, what I want to do and why I bring this to you and why I'm hoping you listen to this and put things into place and not just listen to it and move on with your day. I really want it to transform you, turn on some light bulbs in some way, is because sales is broken. Sales as an industry, as a role, has no structure. There's no governing body. It's not a profession. A plumber is more of a profession because there's an entrance exam, there's requirements, there's insurance, there's consequences if you mess it up. There's all kinds of rules and regulations so that when you hire a plumber, you should get the same quality of a person who knows what they're doing and follows the rules of plumbing or electrical. It's why you shouldn't do your own electrical work. You should hire somebody because they've been trained, they've proven that they're competent, they passed the test, they're held to standards. If they have insurance, so if they do anything wrong, they're held liable. You can hold them liable, and then they have to pay the consequences. And if they screw up enough stuff, then they'll lose their ability to do electrical work or plumbing or contracting or, you know, auto repair, like whatever it is. And so those industries are more of a profession than sales. And so it's up to us. It's up to all of us to do the right thing and to move sales towards this. And really, that gets into one of the main things that Beth said in part one when we were talking about authenticity, is that sales is something that can be done honorably, but it's up to each person. When it's done wrong, it's because it's not done honorably. It's about that person in sales doing whatever they want and doing whatever they can to get the sale and get that deal closed, to get that commission, keep their job, whatever it is that the end result means. And they just don't have to be honorable. And really, again, this is the big key, is it's up to each of us. Do you want to leave people at a better place at the end of every interaction, at the end of selling to them or even not selling to them and telling them to go in a different direction or not buy anything at all when you tell them no, like they don't qualify or it's not in their best interest, it's not going to actually help them? You are leaving them in a better place. And do you do that all the time? This is really what comes to the heart of the how do you sleep at night when you're in sales conversation. When you're sleazy and gross and use manipulation and tactics and, hey, what will it take for you to buy this car before you leave the lot today? Like that kind of like strategies and tactics that people don't like, but it does work, obviously, because those people keep selling. But that goes to the heart of like, how do you sleep at night? Those people, I don't know how they sleep at night, and eventually it will catch up to them. And I know that karma and the universe will take care of things. But for the rest of us, how do you sleep at night? Because I know that I'm doing the right thing for people. When I sell somebody, no matter what I'm selling, whether it's in my business now and selling a company, training, consulting, advising, whatever that might be, or some tech that could help them, or outsourcing, whatever it is that I'm selling, if it makes sense for them, I'm going to move them forward. If it doesn't make sense for them, I'm going to tell them that and keep them on the path that they're on now. And I know that I did the right thing for each person and that I did everything I could with each person. And so I think that's really the important thing. I also love in the part that she was talking about when she went from sales, right, and starting in operations and then being a marketing grad and then ending up in a sales org. And that really what she found was successful for her was being curious, being interested in people, and love helping people. And I think that's a couple of important pieces there. In my side, I call them the sales success traits, and there's five of them. They're openness, curiosity, creativity, persistence, and authenticity. And the reason they're in that order is because that's importance, and then it's layers on top. Like, you could say you want to be very authentic, but unless you're open and curious and creative and persistent, it's going to lead to confidence that's going to allow you to then be authentic, right? Like, obviously, I wrote a book called Selling with Authentic Persuasion. This is the Authentic Persuasion Show. You'd think, okay, my number one trait is for you to be authentic, but that's hard. It's hard to truly be authentic and to trust that it's going to work and to have the confidence and the belief that if I'm authentic, if I'm me, if I'm transparent, if I say what I say and I do what I do, as long as it's professional, but like if I make mistakes or I do this or I'm not sure the answers, like that's okay. And that takes some effort to get to. It would be reckless for me to say, just be authentic, like just do that. Like, no, that's not how our brain works. There's so many factors inside our mind that we struggle and fight against that because we want to fit in. You know, you don't want to be the black sheep of the flock, which if you look at it from the animal kingdom, like the black sheep and the reason why they're called that and they're called out and it's like a negative thing is because most sheep are white or light colored. And when one is born with a dark coat or spots or black, then when they're running from a predator like a wolf, the odd one's going to stand out, right? And then that's the one that's going to be targeted in on, and the wolf is going to take care of that one, right? Our primal brain doesn't want to do that. It wants to stay together. It wants to fit in. It doesn't want to be the black sheep of the family or the group or the society, unless it's trying to be. And so our brain doesn't want that. But here's the key. Openness and curiosity are so important. You have to be open first, and then you can be curious because you have to be open to new ideas and then curious about learning new things, right? You can't just be curious and you can't just be persistent first. If you're persistent without openness, curiosity, and creativity, if you're just persistent, then usually you're a persistent ass and you just want what you want and it's annoying and people don't like it. And we all know, and I won't go down that path, but I've had enough episodes, made enough episodes about that part of the conversation where you don't want to lead with persistence. And we've all met people who do, and it's just off-putting. And so curiosity, as she called it, is so important. And then the second part she said was interested in people. And my mentor, David Meltzer, if you haven't checked him out, he has a ton of content online. He does a lot of great stuff out there. His big thing that he says is be more interested than interesting. A lot of people, especially in sales, think they have to be interesting. Let me talk about me. Let me talk about my company. Let me talk about how amazing I am. Let me talk about the jobs that I have. Let me talk. Like, we interact with a lot of people in our lives where you start talking to them and they just want to monologue. They want to share. And usually it's because no one's listening to them. And they're hoping for someone who's going to listen to them, and they just want to share, and they just want to be interesting, and they just want people to like them. And there's so many different factors. But the key is if you can be interested more than interesting, which means I don't care about myself. I don't want to talk about myself. I just want to talk about you. You are interesting, and I want to learn about you, and I'm curious. Then that is a whole different thing. And again, I have a ton of content. If you haven't read it, get the Selling with Authentic Persuasion book. I also talk about it in some of the eBooks. So you can always email me and I can give you directions to where you can find out more about that, about the openness and the curiosity and the being interested and how to go about that. And really the fundamental part, or the umbrella that goes over all this, is that for Beth, she learned that she really loved helping people. When you make that your focus, when you want to do that, when you want to help people, especially in my terms, help somebody, help people get to a better place than when you found them, right? Like the old school hiking, camping, Boy Scout, Cub Scout mode of, you know, leaving the place better than you found it, right? Like if you go hiking and you see someone else's garbage, take that garbage with you so that you're leaving it even better than you found it, not leaving it like you found it with that garbage, but not yours. Like, take other people's garbage with you. Same thing with this, leaving people better than you found them. Not just leaving them like you found them, leaving them better. And when you make that your mission and your goal, like it is for me, then what happens is sales is something different, because now it's all about I'm helping you. It's not that you're doing something for me. It's not that you know I need you to do something. It's I want to help you in whatever way I can. And obviously the intersection is if I can help you and it is with something I'm selling or I have access to, then I'm going to benefit as well, which is very fair. That's commerce. That's capitalism. That's I'm going to help you get to a better place and I'm going to get paid for it. And the more you can do that, the more that you're going to make, whether it's a lot of small transactions or like solving little problems or solving big problems, and then you're going to get paid big money. And so that's the big part. And that's really falls on to all of us, going back to the sales being something that if it's going to be honorable, it's up to you. It's up to me. It's up to everybody. And so we've got to do that. Now, part two, this is where it gets really fun. This is where I absolutely love the conversation. And here's why, is because I talked to a lot of professors, and a lot of professors on this program take the simple route of getting the spin selling book and teaching spin selling. And there's nothing wrong with that. I disagree with it. I think it's a framework to use, but to base a whole class around it or teaching everyone one methodology, I disagree with. But it's better than nothing, right? And especially if they can teach it and then put it in the right framework of here's spin selling, and then here's why this is important, and here's how you use it. And this is a tool in the toolbox. My challenge with teaching one methodology, and I've talked about this a lot on the podcast, is that you're now teaching someone how to use one tool. And the problem I have with that is that, let's say with Spin or Challenger or Sandler or anything like that, that is a tool in the toolbox. Doesn't necessarily mean that you have the right tool in all the right situations or even know what to do with it. You've just learned that tool, right? And really, it's you buying a hammer, investing in that hammer, committing to that hammer, and then thinking everything in life is a nail that needs to be hit with a hammer. And that's absolutely not true. And that's what I see people do with certain sales methodologies, is they try to hit every prospect with the same hammer. And that's not how life works. That's why my conversation with Lef Bonney a few years ago was amazing, because he talked about how many sales methodologies sales professionals use in a conversation or a sales cycle. And it's like 3 to 5 or something like that, where they're blending different styles. And I think that's important. But no matter what, teaching something is better than nothing. It gives a foundation, and then that student graduates and goes out there in the real world. Here's what I love more about what Beth did, because she did what I did, which is, wait a second, that methodology is good, but you have to understand the fundamentals. I call it my authentic persuasion pathway, which is built around the fundamentals of moving someone out of their comfort zone into buying something new, which is what you're selling, because what you're selling represents change, and that's dangerous, and there's so many factors to it. So mine is rapport, empathy, trust, hope, and urgency. And you must do it in that order, and you must do it in a complete way. And I have training, and this is what I coach teams on and individuals on, and even have my online course, Selling with Authentic Persuasion, that's available. Like, that's what I help people understand, is those fundamentals. And then you can layer on the tools. That's like understanding how a car works and how to fix a car with the fundamental mechanics. And then you get your tools and your toolbox, which then help you fix it depending on what it is, but you have to know the fundamentals. And so for Beth, I love it, because hers is called Cashew, which is connect, ask, solve problem, position, solution, handle objections, concerns, and unite, which is the close. Now, I love this framework. I think this is great. Connect, which is rapport, ask, which is that discovery. I refer to it as empathy, because it's not just asking. I want it to be empathetic. I want to ask, I want to learn, I want to be curious, I want to be interested, but I want to do it because I care. It's dangerous sometimes when you say just do discovery or just ask, because now I'm just asking either because I'm checking a box or I'm on a mission and I need to find something and I don't really care, right? And so you got to be careful with that. Solve the problem, position, solution. I think that's important. What's missing in here is the trust step. And then handle objections and concerns as they come up. I think one of those things is having that as a stage. Obviously, it's like you're expecting it. You know it's going to happen. And so where's that balance? Because if you do sales correctly in certain ways, you're not going to necessarily get objections and concerns that are going to come up. It's just going to come up as you go. And if you do enough discovery, you can preempt a lot of those things. So kind of expecting it is where I have an issue. There's another part that I'm going to talk about in a different episode where I have an issue with negotiation as a stage in a sales process, because that's just assuming there's going to be a battle, right? Which is a negotiation. So, and then the last part she has in there is unite, which is close, which is me and you. I love that. It's like you and I, this is what I tell people all the time. It's you and I versus the world. It's you and I versus your problem. It's you and I versus whatever that is, right? This isn't adversarial, which is what she talked about. This isn't me versus you. This is me and you, going somewhere, right? I'm your guide. You're the hero. I'm going to get you to a better place, which is what I talk about all the time. Let's go. And she even talks about that, right? It's one of the biggest things, and I think this is a huge shift, is she, in the second episode, she says, this is not a fencing match. Sales is not a fencing match. This is not sparring. This is not me versus you. And it's like, how do I position and jockey and move around and dodge, and you come at me and then I roll away and I use your energy against you, like it's jujitsu or taekwondo or something like that. No, that's what people think sales is, right? And that's part of the challenge, is people think sales is this battle. It's me versus you, and it's a fencing match, and it's sparring, and it's I got to do this, and you got to do this, and I got to parry, and I got to guard. And like, no, like that's doing it wrong, literally doing it wrong. And that's what's wrong with sales from both sides. It's hard to be a salesperson in that mode. It's hard to be a customer in that mode. Instead, it should be much, much more coordinated, as she said. It should be a dance together. We're not adversaries. We are partners, potentially, if things go well. Huge lesson. Please make sure to check out part two of all three of these episodes, and really all the episodes of this season. This was one of the most impactful that I agree with the most. And obviously there's some bias because I have guests on the show that I like and that I'm interacted with. And I'm like, yes, this will be a fun conversation. I don't have like a battling show, a debate show. This isn't about, you know, opposing point of views, and I'm going to bring people on just to tear them apart. So obviously there's some bias there, but this part two, episode 627, please make sure to check that out. If you're skipping to this episode to get just the cliff notes, make sure to go back and listen to that. And then the third part, I know this episode's going long, we're at like 16 minutes already. The third part of the conversation about the future of sales, it's really about less of the cold cookie cutter, more of the customized, do your research. Here's the biggest thing, and this is a theme now in all of these conversations so far, and the ones I've recorded that haven't come out yet either, is that the buyers don't want you wasting their time. Buyers want you to respect their time and respect them by doing the research and not coming at them with dumb questions you could have answered online. And I do mean dumb questions like, hey, tell me about your biggest challenges. Tell me about your industry. Tell me about your customer. Like, if you're asking them dumb questions that you could have found online, they're not going to feel respected, and they're not going to listen to you, and they're not going to give you much more time. They might fall for it in one meeting. I promise they're not going to show up for a second meeting. Absolutely not. And that's the big thing, right, is respecting their time and being careful with the volume game. Make sure that you're, like she said, she hopes that sales math gets smarter and more strategic. You got to focus on less of the numbers game and more of the strategic, more of how do you find the right people and have the right conversations in the best way possible. So thank you for checking this out. Make sure to check out the three parts with Beth Reniger from University of South Carolina. And I appreciate you being here and changing the way sales is done.